We're just about a minute from getting started. Ingest your caffeine, ingest whatever substance gets you started for the day. Just make sure it's not going to denigrate your mind and body. Treat it well. You only get one body, at least as far as we know it. And treat it like a temple. I hope you exercise this morning. I was out for a good 30-minute walk with the puppers this morning. In the early morning sunlight, great to adjust that circadian rhythm from all the nasty exposure to light that we get every day. But just generally, moving is going to be the best thing you can do for yourself. If you're not moving, you're doing yourself a disservice, especially if you are chained to a desk like myself for many, many hours a day. You got to work those muscles, stimulate the mind, and get out in the sun, absorb that vitamin D. Looks like we're here at the top of the hour, so we're going to kick things off until we're joined by our guest in a few. Hopefully I'll see him when he comes on and he'll request to come up and speak. But until then, we can go over the Daily Intelligence Bulletin as we've done this week. There he is, fundamentals, bringing you up onto the stage as a speaker. But we are going to first cover the Daily Intelligence Bulletin put out by Bitcoin Veterans. If you are unfamiliar with Bitcoin Veterans, go to bitcoinveterans.org. Check us out. We are educating the warrior class on Bitcoin. If you think it's not needed, I beg to differ. We are a group of veterans, military veterans, largely based out of the U.S., but some international members across the United States, active and participating in this Bitcoin economy that we find ourselves all part of. So, Bitcoin Daily Intelligence Bulletin, block height 906,821 for 23 July. Happy birthday to my mom. Bottom line up front for all the headlines, if you hadn't catched them. U.S. announces a Japan trade deal. UNESCO dropped again by U.S. World Court weighs in on climate. DOJ to talk with Epstein's madam. U.S. tactical nuke may have been brought to U.K. South Korean authorities say don't touch crypto stocks. U.S. senators draft another crypto bill. Are stablecoins a form of CBDC? Bitcoin strategies flourish. Telegram launches wallet. Stocks hit new highs. Microsoft SharePoint hacked. London wrench attackers convicted. Meteor showers celebrate all-time highs. And NFL star happy with Bitcoin salary. That last one, I think anybody would be happy if they've been taking a large portion of their salary over the last few years. Market data price, one Bitcoin is still one Bitcoin, but if you need to trade it for some murder notes, you can trade it for about $118,648 or roughly 34.61 ounces of gold or about 0.28 of a median U.S. home. 24-hour high was up in the 120,000 range and low down in 117,000 range. Volume down a little bit, 8%. Market cap sitting around $2.3 trillion. Hash rate down a little bit from yesterday's reading to 897 exahash per second. Fun fact, exahash per second is something you can't actually calculate. It is all a guess. Nobody knows how much hash rate is out there. We're all just guessing at it based on something called a Poisson distribution. If you don't know what that means, it's okay. Your BitAx will calculate it for you. Average free rate down a little bit. It's reporting zero sats per vbyte, but if you go check mempool.space, look at the average sats per vbyte that are needed to get into a block, it's right around one or so, which is always good, but fees in general, just historically low. As is usual, peaks and troughs for the fees, very, very open market for that block space. So without further ado, it looks like we have our guests up here, but first let me say good morning to AC. Good morning, AC. Thanks for coming up and co-hosting with me. How are you?
Absolutely. Morning, Goblin. Always a pleasure to join you on stage. You bring a wealth of knowledge, so looking forward to the conversation. Thanks.
Sure thing. And our guest today is Fundamentals, who has something to share with us. How are you doing this morning, Fundamentals?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Pretty cool to be here.
I know you know me by other names, but I go by Mining Goblin here in the X sphere.
So it's weird to see you here. Me as such.
Yeah, I know.
It's weird to see you here.
Well, somebody had to host the space, and our normal host, Bob, is taking a knee and getting some much-needed R&R. So I volunteered to come up, and I guess we're doing all right.
Can I make one note on your comment, on your comments, your opening comments? Which, by the way, dude, it's like you have a great radio thing going. So
I do have a face for radio, or at least that's what my ex-girlfriend told me.
So one note, because you and I do a math podcast together. And
we do.
The thing about the exahash, I laughed when you called it a poison distribution because it just evoked it evoked certain images. So it's something we should probably do an episode on. And it's a well-known probability distribution called Poisson, which I know sounded really pretentious.
I'm American.
Sounded really pretentious to correct you on, but like it is kind of poison. It's kind of cool, but just make a mental note to have a discussion on that.
Absolutely. Good morning, BFP. Welcome. You want to say anything to the crowd before we kick it off with our guest?
Good morning.
All right, perfect. Well, without further ado, we are talking to the one and the only Fundamentals. If anyone is unfamiliar with him, you can find him at Fundamentals21M here on X, or you can find him over on the Noster Sphere as well. And if you are in the Philly area, I think you might be able to encounter him at one of the various meetups that happened in that location. But what are we here to talk about today, Fundy?
Well, I did just put out a book, so I probably should talk about it. I also do 4 podcasts, and I would be happy to talk about any one of those as well.
Let's cover the book first, because I have some questions for you.
All right, great. Well, you just got a copy of it, right, a couple days ago? Well, you've had it, I gave you your signed copy a couple days ago. Have you been able to open it up and read any of it?
I did. I got through the intro. I've not gotten into any of the chapters yet.
I think it's a good set to set up. So like, hello everybody, really, just realizing now, everyone here listening are probably people I don't know, and I already set myself up as a pretentious douche to pronouncing a French probability distribution.
But this is a safe space for douches and retards, so you're welcome.
I did write this book. It's called Bitcoin for Institutions, and if you just looked at the boring black cover and the name, you'd probably think it's just some paper Bitcoin summer celebration, and maybe somebody trying to ride the coattails off of this new movement going on. And this is a great space to just for me to really tell you guys what the book is really about. When I started writing the book, there was no Bitcoin treasury industry to even know about. And so I wasn't thinking about it then, and I'm not honestly really thinking about it much now. I had a long career as an actuary and a quant, and managed the market risk of like super complicated financial systems. Came into the Bitcoin space in like early 22 and fell super deep and just kind of went ham, Started a blog, started a podcast, started a meetup, just like I had to like, it just was, nothing was enough. And like I was rethinking everything I had ever learned in my life very rapidly, mostly as a quant and like working with math people who just like their whole way they judge things is how mathematically complicated is this, right? And I was like coming to terms with like, that's kind of stupid, and these people are way off signal. And it was all happening at the time where the world, it's like clown world was bifurcating, And like all the people who are super impressed by math were bifurcating into one area, and, you know, the people who were questioning were bifurcating somewhere else. And, you know, so none of this has to do with this book just yet. Just a little backstory. But the book, if you
open it, I think it sets it up for, you know, your background and why you're quote unquote qualified to write this book, or the perspective or experiences you've had sort of make you uniquely positioned to offer a perspective like this.
Yeah. This is like real talk for institutions. This is no institutional simp. This is like, I had a view for a while. So 2 years ago, I was let go from my job, which I was working for a Fortune 500 insurance company. I'd say I was like 10% of the way to getting a bunch of Bitcoin projects off the ground, you know, so not too far, but I had them thought out and like ready to go. So when I got let go, it took about 6 months to figure out I should write a book. But then I had this whole kind of playbook that I developed that I also thought, like, I wanted to share it, but it didn't feel right. Like, it didn't feel right to me to write a book to say, here's what companies should do with Bitcoin, because I honestly didn't believe companies should go near Bitcoin. Like, I've had a few experiences in my life working with institutions and realized that, like, the likelihood of any institution actually holding Bitcoin is so low. Like, just started thinking about it. Like, you start as an individual, and that your likelihood's pretty low even as a based individual of holding Bitcoin. And then you add a person to the mix, like a wife or somebody like that, and the likelihood of hodling just gets so much more complicated. And every additional person you add, and governance and all that stuff, it just makes it much more complicated. So I had a pretty strong view that institutions were not, it just was never going to happen. And I was on a podcast like a little under a year ago. If anybody's familiar with Ungovernable Misfits, I was on with Max.
Great show.
Yeah. And Jordan, the producer, titled it Fundamentals, : There Is No Institutional Adoption. And I was just so clear about it. I mainly just hated the institutional space, really, with just, you know, I mean, part of it's just my experience in working with them. And I had just such a low opinion of it. And then, I was challenged by like an old mentor. He was challenging me, basically saying, look, man, you left your career, you dedicated your life to this. He's like, do me a favor, make a case why, like, this is not just a bunch of people trading soap with each other. Like, make a case, tell me like why it should really do this. And what kept coming to me was like, not until I tell you why you shouldn't do it. And that's really what the book is.
Funny. That's the book starts out, right? So if I'm just looking at the table of contents, you know, you got the preface, prologue, acknowledgments, and the first chapter of the book is titled Bitcoin is for Individuals. And I do recall reading, I think you released an article or essay on this exact topic, making the assertion that, you know, hodling Bitcoin is sort of an individual action. And just to follow up, it's three main chapters in this book. You know, you've got Bitcoin is for Individuals, and then Individuals Run Institutions, which I think both track. And then finally, the final chapter is Institutional Bitcoin. Yeah. So let's try to go over like, what are each of those chapters and like try to break it down as concise as we can, you know, in the next 30 minutes or so. Like, what do each of those chapters cover? What are they trying to convey? And then maybe touch on what in your experience has led you to this conclusion.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting to me is to focus on the first two chapters and the final chapter, really. I mean, anyone can get the book for like 2,100 sats or something pretty trivially on Zeus. Gary can send a PDF to anybody here who wants it. But that's the final chapter is like, okay, here are the things you can do. Here are the projects I was looking to do. I don't find that to be the most interesting part of the book, to be honest. That's the part that I'm hoping gets me work in the future. But the part that I think is important really are the first two sections. First one being Bitcoin is for individuals. And so really the fundamental premise here is that if you're an institution, right, whether you like Bitcoin or not, whether you want to use Bitcoin or not, you do need to understand why individuals value Bitcoin. And if you do, like, what I imagined, the scenario I imagined I want to say this was around 9 or 10 months ago when like Microsoft had a vote, like some annoying activist investor forced them to vote on like whether or not they would entertain Bitcoin in some way. And I started just imagining like what, like the worst case scenario was that they actually agreed to do it because, Microsoft is like, what, 100,000 employees, right? They'd have to find like a couple of thousand project managers who were really good at Bitcoin. And, you know, I don't know, like if you try to find 5,000 people in the world who really could do this job, we're going to get down to some of the lunatics we interact with every day on Twitter, you know?
Like, and what is their desire to work at Microsoft too?
Like Dieter Bob would have to be a project manager at Microsoft because that's how thin the pool would be. And they'd have to pay him like $3 million for a quarter to work, you know, like, and they'd have to deal with like project management updates. Like, you know what? This project, it's going pretty well, but the guy that is working on it, he decided to reside his house and he'll just get to it when he's done with it. I mean, this is like, the world's not ready to deal with Bitcoin. You know, the world's not ready to deal with us and the people that know what they're doing. And I felt like a company was going to get strong-armed against, almost like against their will, into engaging. And so I wrote the book with that fear in mind. And so I was like, here is, if you find yourself in that situation, okay, here is what you really would need to know to avoid, like, it's pretty dangerous stuff. Right. Like, so the companies that have abused the individual have really, I'd say done real damage to their industries. I just think of companies like Celsius and, you know, companies like that who like, A, not only didn't respect the individual, but really kind of just exploited their weaknesses. I think it's really important to understand what gives Bitcoin value. And my main thesis here is that it is individuals and their desires and their needs and their existential crises and what they see Bitcoin as a solution to is truly what gives Bitcoin its value, not institutions deciding to. In fact, institutions, to me, the only value they see for the most part in Bitcoin is a return. And if, you know, if that's all it is to you, you're going to be probably outbid forever by people like us who see it as much more than that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, just talking about like, you know, you mentioned an institution having to be strong-armed into doing this, and that's essentially what Saylor did with, you know, Strategy, formerly MicroStrategy now. You know, there's like 1,500 employees at that company, last I heard, and there's probably a dozen or two, if that, that truly understand Bitcoin. Now, everybody's like, working there, they don't care because their stock price is pumping and all their employee grants are like way better than what they would have been. But the strong leadership of an individual has an outside influence on that. And now we're seeing like the trickle down effects of people realizing that an institution, while needing to be stronger by individuals or have at least a strong leadership that gets Bitcoin to drive that forward. You know, institutions have a capability of doing a lot more than an individual can as well. So I think that's an interesting dynamic to unpack as well.
They can have a lot of like sort of outsized power, right? So, but let's get to just sort of the fun, like the fundamentals of why individuals are just, you know, they just see so much more value. And so here's the kind of list of things I thought it was really important for a company to know. Right. One is like, you know, individuals care about privacy. Individuals care about, you know, ownership, right? Like there's a section called Bitcoin's a bearer asset. And it's almost like, what the hell is a bearer asset? But like, if you're a company who's, selling something relating to Bitcoin, you have to understand that every layer of abstraction between the bearer asset and what you're offering, like they're going to discount tremendously because, you know, a lot of why people find Bitcoin valuable is the ability to actually own it. So things like that, things like how hard it is to HODL, how much it, like, it requires being unreasonable, which is why it's much easier for one person to do it than an organization. Like, you have to be irrational and unreasonable to successfully HODL Bitcoin. Bitcoin requires a long time horizon, which companies don't have. Companies live quarter to quarter, right? Even in their planning and their project management, it's still quarter to quarter. And like every once in a while, probably once every 2 or 3 years, there's some project that's big enough that maybe they go beyond that quarterly view and they go engage all their consultants like McKinsey and all these, you know, all these, you know, their consultants, their accountants, and they fire all the executives and they rehire them to get line up around some big strategy. But that's like totally exceptional. For the most part, that strategy is in place and the company just has, you know, 3 month by 3 month by 3 month optics, which Bitcoin's never going to work in an environment like that.
I think it's akin to sort of, and I've heard this on a recent podcast, I think from the 1031 guys, we're talking about how like these quarterly or even month to month sort of timeframes just don't work on a Bitcoin standard because, you know, one, given the rapid devaluation of the dollar and the volatility and stuff, it makes planning around that very, very difficult, especially if your base unit is still fiat and you're not denominated in Bitcoin. But then also just the nature of a Bitcoin where it drives more lower time preference, longer term thinking. You have to project out even farther. And fiat makes that super difficult. And so especially I think about like publicly traded companies and institutions that have to be beholden to their shareholders, which their shareholders probably don't get Bitcoin at all.
Well, you would think they have to be beholden to their shareholders, but that's something I covered literally in the first chapter of the book is that, you know, and this is sort of setting up people getting strong-armed into Bitcoin, right? Is that like DEI and ESG and like these demoralizing programs that were clearly not for the benefit of their shareholders, that really acted against the benefit of the shareholders. Something is going on in the world where that fiduciary requirement is no longer it's either no longer enforced or it's lost, right? And so I think companies are confused now. Like, who am I a fiduciary to? Right. And, you know, so I don't know, like, I don't even know that if you go into Bitcoin, right, you still have this weird disconnect with your fiduciary requirement. You know, like it's now very muddy. And that's, again, that's like all I say is like, I think the entry into Bitcoin for a lot of these companies is just going to be something that is not fiduciary necessarily. Well, so that's like when we're talking about like the Microsofts and Amazons of the world, like it's going to be something that somebody important to them insists that they do. Now, in a case of BlackRock and MicroStrategy, which then is I talk about in depth in the second part of the book, those were caused by existential, like absolutely existential crises among the individuals that run those companies.
What do you mean by that?
So the case of Michael Saylor in 2020, his existential problem was $250 million of his life savings that he's been, you know, that he has put in this company that he has opted to delay gratification on, opted to delay spending on something. And staring down the pen of, you know, the 40% money print and, you know, just the complete capitulation that Bitcoin was the only possible solution to that. It's so funny. I think about it so often that like, how many times did he come to this conclusion that it had to be Bitcoin? And he's like, no, it can't be. It just can't be. There's no way I can go tell it. I cannot go tell the world that I found the solution to my problem and it's exclusively Bitcoin, right? And I was thinking about this with Saylor. I was thinking about it with Larry Fink too. Like it's just like, oh my God, imagine being on record for saying Bitcoin's only for criminals. And then you come to this absolute truth that it's the only solution to the problem you have. So, you know, so Sailor and MicroStrategy, it was the savings issue. It was like, I don't know. I have the savings. I saved my whole freaking, I've saved for decades upon decades. And, you know, I don't know about everyone on this call. I'm 50 years old and I'm old enough to remember when there was an idea that when you saved, there was like a, you know, there was a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. You know, there was a reward at the end for doing so. And, you know, it's just an absolute kick in the teeth to realize that not only is there no reward for savings, right? There's, in addition to the paper cuts they've been giving you for decades, now they're going to really, you know, they're going to really debase you hard. And everybody knew it. Everybody saw it coming. And this guy, Sailor, just somehow figured out that he could sidestep it with Bitcoin. But, you know, like, he had to put his reputation on the line. I'm sure a lot of other people came to this conclusion and they just weren't willing to, they weren't willing to really do it.
Well, yeah. And the savings note, and, just makes me think, you know, about the recommendations. I went to one of the first, like, sort of courses I went to outside of boot camp for the Navy was this thing called Million Dollar Sailor. And it was all your traditional. And I mean, mind you, this was, in the midst of the great financial crisis, right? So this was like end of 08 timeframe. And it was like, hey, you just take 10% and you put it into your retirement and you'll be golden at the end of it. And now, you know, as a millennial, in my 30s, it's like Bitcoin to me, after doing all the math, is the only way to have that savings realized. And to have that savings actually do something for me and my family into the future.
It's really the only way to have a shot, right? To even have a shot at it. You know, I didn't really understand all this until a couple of years ago. It's weird to be 50 and then spend your whole life spending your whole life in finance, feeling like you're a market leader and that you really understand things. And then, you know, come to realize, man, never had a shot. So like it's hard for millennials. Because they have much more time, but at least you do have Bitcoin. And, so just back to Sailor. I mean, I think what he did was I kind of credit him for changing the conversation from like being an investment, like a CNBC news talking point to, you know, being a place to save your money, which, you know, if you go back to 2020, you know, when he came in and you kind of trace him through 2023, right? That was really that's the message he was pushing. And the point I really make about it is that is such a relatable individual problem, right? And, you know, a lot of individuals related to it followed him and won like, just won like fucking crazy, right? Everybody won like crazy who, you know, 2020 just followed the advice, put their savings in Bitcoin. Didn't have to be all of it. Just some portion of their savings that they really, really wanted to protect, put it in Bitcoin. And every single one of them just like the exact event went as expected and everybody won. It's wild, right? It's I detail that. And, but the point is this was a very relatable use case. And so to me, Sailor at his best was when he was being an individual and solving the problem of an individual. And, you know, not to be too controversial, I don't know if you look at the problem he's solving now, it's a little different. It's a little less relatable. And the jury is out on whether or not it's, you know, I mean, he's probably going to win and it's probably going to be wildly successful, but the jury, I think, is out on whether it is, you know, as meaningful of like, you know, do we really need this company to exist to do what it's doing now? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I think they do it well and all that, but, we definitely like, I think, you know, he's like goes down in human history as helping a bunch of people figure out something they never were able to figure out before. And he did so at like tremendous risk, right?
I credit Sailor with my orange pilling. The What Is Money series was the one that really made it all click for me. But on the topic of like current paradigm, you kind of talked about Sailor up through 2023 and stuff. Do you want to elaborate more on sort of like the current offerings and stuff? You know, some people akin it to like the infinite money glitch and all these things. And again, that to me is highlighting sort of like the ability of these institutions to do things a lot differently than what the individuals would do. And we'll further expand the scope of the question to just the broader, you know, paper Bitcoin summer, right? As people are calling it, where all these treasury companies are spinning up and plowing a bunch of money into Bitcoin as a balance sheet item. And I think of note, and maybe one of the differentiators is you had, you know, a VC backed company, called Figma that has had Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And I think they're looking to go public or something along those lines, but either way it's disclosed that they had this balance. And they did it without fanfare, right? So you there's kind of like, I often wonder what other institutions, companies, what have you, are just quietly stacking sats in the background alongside of all these other individuals that we are. Where does that take you?
You know what's interesting also, and what happened without fanfare? I don't know if anyone on this call even knows. Gary, I don't know if you know this. I've tried to scream this from the rooftops, but I have no following. So was it 2024? Right after the Nashville Bitcoin conference, like 2 days after the Bitcoin conference in Nashville, something happened that I think would have been headline news and everyone in the world would know. And for some reason, it's very puzzling that nobody knows this. It's that MicroStrategy's debt was upgraded from like junk, from official junk, like triple C to double B.
And, what does that mean? I don't understand what that means.
So their debt, their outstanding bonds that they had up until that point in time, right? Every company who issues debt gets rated by S&P or Moody's or, you know, nationally, I forgot what it's called, nationally rated, not nationally, you know, it's national rating agencies. And like AAA is the best credit rating and nobody has that. The US used to have that. And then they were downgraded, I want to say 2012, something like that. They were downgraded in the sovereign debt crisis, never to be upgraded again. AA, like most good corporates considered single or AA, right? And this investment grade is triple B and above. And so MicroStrategy's debt was rated triple C up until last July. And they were upgraded to double B, which I guess made them eligible for like insurance companies and institutions. You know, nobody knew this happened. In fact, I didn't even see this press release until I was doing research for the book. And I was like, it was like, you know, you read Bitcoin books about history and be like, how the hell did they never, how is it possible this happened and no one ever taught this, right? I saw this press release and it was like the day after the Bitcoin conference. And I was like, how the hell did nobody talk about this, right?
Well, people probably just don't understand the implications. So try to break that down for us, right? What are the implications of that?
It would seem like a good thing. It would seem like a good piece of news that he would want people to know. So I don't want to get too into this, but like, you know, it's a piece of good news, but for some reason he didn't want anybody knowing or talking about it. And they don't talk about their debt ratings at all. So I don't know what that's about. I really don't know what that is all about. And this, you know, when I look at these, sort of the game they're playing now, they're probably the best company doing it. I just don't know that I don't know that this is a good thing. I think it has good qualities. I think speculative attacks are probably a good thing. I just don't know if it's what the world needs. You know, I don't know how risky it is. I do see a scenario, you know, for all the, you know, there's enough people that talk about how great this all is. That's why I don't like focus on it. But for all the speculative attack and for all the Bitcoin that's going to be bought and probably held, right, that goes against my intuition, they'll probably will hold it, right? It's probably the only way for a company to hold Bitcoin is if that's what they're established to do, right? So that's all well and good. I just see you know, I worked in the insurance industry, and the insurance industry in a lot of ways was responsible for the 08 crisis. And we all know the story about mortgage-backed securities. You know, insurance companies were unlimited buyers of mortgage-backed securities. And so their demand was so great that eventually, they started packaging pretty shitty. They just ran out of really good. They ran out of AAA mortgages to put in these packages, right? So they had to go less and less quality over time to feed the beast. And, you know, this was the thing. It was like a, you know, something like a $3 trillion write down. And the financial crisis was something like $20 trillion. So it's a small percentage of the overall impact, but it's the thing that like tipped, it's the thing that tipped it over. And it's just the insurance industry is the dumbest fucking group of people you'll ever see on the face of this earth. I mean, it's so funny that people expect them to be smart. I heard like during COVID, like, oh, insurance companies will figure out the mortality. I mean, it's like, dude, I was on these mortality committees and it's like, you guys are, they're never, ever, ever, ever going to figure this out. You know, they're going to do what they're told and not question it. And just people should know insurance companies are not that intelligent. In fact, and you know, the fact that they're the biggest bond buyers in the world now and they're not trying to do anything about it should tell you that they're not acting, you know, they're not acting out of a fiduciary duty. Cause if they were, they would be sued by somebody for being, you know, for being super irresponsible just by just buying endless bonds. Right. But they,
when is that like, is that because that's the playbook that they're required to run or, you know, are there regulatory hurdles? Cause I've heard my grub brain understanding of, you know, some of the arcane infinite money glitch that Saylor is working on is to sort of target these locked capital pools that can't get access to spot Bitcoin because they have some mandate or regulation that prevents them from doing so.
Yeah. So like, let me ask you this then, right? If a regulatory, body were to actually define how Bitcoin could be used by these insurance companies, how much do you think Saylor would spend to prevent that from happening?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
And I don't want to presume, right? I just feel like the way
you have to look at economic incentives, right? Like it's an assumption or it's a guess. But incentives are everything in this world. And if you look at incentives, you know, I've heard rumored that, there was a negative sentiment towards indicating the spending of Bitcoin at MicroStrategy, right? So even if to suggest that is sort of a verboten thing. And that would track with just sort of the general demeanor of buy and hodl, never sell, right? Leverage your house. Don't have to sell. You buy Bitcoin, don't sell it sort of thing. But I think the flip side of that, and I'd be curious what your take. Are you familiar with the Parker Lewis pay me in Bitcoin thesis?
Like vaguely.
So the general thesis, pretty simple, is you know the providers of goods and services, whether that's labor or anything else, eventually as they continue to discover Bitcoin and the properties they're in, and have a strong desire for it, and to your assertion, individuals being the most irrational group of people to demand Bitcoin. Eventually, you know, your plumber might tell you one day, like, hey, I don't want your dollars. Or if you do give me dollars, I'm going to charge you 20%. You know, I personally run my side business with a 20% premium on fiat. And that is to deter people from giving me fiat.
Absolutely.
It's happened multiple times.
I sell the book for 2,100 sats. But if you must buy the Kindle version, it's 10 bucks. And I laugh. I swear, dude, I've had seven people have bought the Kindle book. And I'm like, these people are, what's wrong with these people? Right? And it's true. Like, I like to call it a fiat surcharge, right? But like, just back to the MicroStrategy, this, you know, when you talk about the sentiment of people not wanting to spend their Bitcoin, to me, that speaks to the limited view of Bitcoin to them. They just have a limited value, a super limited. It's like really, they have a really narrow, very narrow sense of how valuable Bitcoin is. And so I think in the long run, individuals just end up, they do end up outbidding them. Maybe not, you know, certainly not in the short run because they're behemoth, right? But at some point you just can kind of see that they're not, you know, if you want to tie both hands behind your back, right? It's very hard to have diamond hands. So I just think it's a big contradiction. And I just, it'll be interesting to see if MicroStrategy truly does hold their Bitcoin long term. If that's, you know, without some revelation or some enlightenment of, you know, seeing the value as much as most people do.
I mean, I think that we force apart with their Bitcoin when somebody that is some critical service to their institution requires it or demands it as payment. BFP, I see you have your hand up. Did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, crux of the matter is MSTR or strategy. I think it's the big question in my mind is, are they going to be able to outperform Bitcoin? So MSTR, I have a little in my daughter's custodial account, and I just sell covered calls, and when I get called away, I'm going to buy her Bitcoin. But in my mind, it's just, and I don't think they can over the long term.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say two things. I mean, I'm not a prognosticator. I don't, returns are just, I think they're bad optics because they're USD returns. So to me, anything that pays in USD is fundamentally fucked. B, I know people will say, well, you know, they're really Bitcoin denominated, but if you don't spend Bitcoin, you're not denominated in it. I mean, that's I don't know how you can be, right? So like, I have a section, one of my sections in the book in the end talks about a company like, say, Amazon that doesn't give a shit about Bitcoin, just buy some to sell in rising markets and make your operations profitable, make certain operations profitable that otherwise, you know, give yourself optionality, but you can't be denominated in Bitcoin if you don't spend Bitcoin. It's that really is sort of a very basic thing, right?
Well, that gets into the whole store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account thing. And, you know, my understanding is a store of value is like, what value are you storing? You're storing the value for future exchange, right? Like there's the reason why you hold on to something is because you believe it will be valuable in the future when you need something that is more valuable, right? So value is subjective. So time to time, circumstance, right, everything changes. So it's like the whole like, bottle of water or a fistful of diamonds in the desert after you've had no water for the past 24 hours. It's like, you're not going to give a shit about that fistful of diamonds.
Their first mover advantage might be enough to like be just so overwhelming for a long time before any of these dynamics really play. It's very possible.
Oh, absolutely. They're a 1,000-pound gorilla fighting in the ring here.
And they deserve that first mover. They deserve it. I do see a hand still up.
No, I think that might be a glitch, unless BFP, you got something.
Glitch.
Okay. All right, glitch. Let me use this opportunity to plug something we've got coming up for Bitcoin veterans. Bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. Again, Bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. That is where you can go to get more information on an upcoming Veterans Day event we're hosting down at Bitcoin Park in Nashville, November 10th and 11th. The first day is going to be a summit of panels and speakers, your normal sort of conference experience, but in a much smaller setting, much smaller, intimate venue. So really, really high signal at these smaller events, especially when you get the quality of individuals that Bitcoin Veterans is going to be bringing to the table. As an organization, we have people across the Bitcoin industry, across general industry in general, and across a broad domain of different topics that we'll be covering in workshops, hands-on workshops, right? So if you've never handled a firearm, come out to the summit. We'll get one in your hands. We'll teach you how to safely operate it. And then if you're into that kind of stuff, you can follow on for the second day, which is going to be a range day hosted at a ranch local to Nashville, just outside of Nashville. We did something very similar last year at the Bitcoin Conference 2024, where we did a range day, huge success. We'll have three different tiers of shooters, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So come out and join us at the Bitcoin Veterans Summit 2025, Bitcoin Park, November 10th and 11th. You can find more information at bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. Plug ended. Thank you.
Dude, you're good at this, man. You're really good at this. I have to say, I'm impressed.
So I kind of wanted to pause and see if there's anybody from the audience that wanted to come up and had, you know, specific questions for fundamentals or specific questions about, you know, the institutional adoption of Bitcoin that we see beginning to proliferate. So I'll give a moment for people to request to come up on stage and ask. And if not, we can continue just having a chat
if
about
we're
it.
Putting the plug in, I don't know if you have the Zeus Pay site link, but it's actually a pretty cool experience. You can pay 2,100 sats, give an email address, and it's like literally takes like 20 seconds to, it's one of the cooler to me Lightning experiences, just being able to, you get an EPUB and a PDF.
Yeah, I posted from the Bitcoin Veterans handle here a picture of the cover of the book as well as a link out to that Zeus Pay. Go ahead, BFP.
Nice.
I mainly only read paper books. Do you have it in paper? I was wondering if I could get it mailed to my house or something like that.
Yeah, if you look Absolutely. In the Nest, AC posted a link to the Amazon link to go check out. So you can hand over those dirty cuck bucks and get it shipped physical right to your house. It's a nice book. It's a hardcover book. It's not too thick.
I do sell them for Bitcoin. I've sent a few out, I think I charged.
Yeah, I'd prefer to pay in Bitcoin and have it sent to my house. Where do I do that?
I'm not really sure. DM me.
Perfect. Yeah, shoot him a DM. If you know how to get a hold of me, then feel free to shoot me a message on Signal or some other platform. I can get you in touch with him as well. It looks like
it's weird asking for people's home addresses and things like that. But I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy to take sats instead of an Amazon sale.
Get a PO box if you're worried about your home address. Foiling Cowboy, welcome to the stage and good morning.
Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thanks. Fundamentals, I wanted to ask you, you say spend in Bitcoin. What tooling would you suggest for handling taxes with that?
I don't know. I don't know. That's a problem. Uh-huh. I think that's a problem, right? That nobody really knows. But
yeah, it's a psychological barrier for me, I'd say.
I'm saying you take the frictions of taxation even out. I would still say it's impossible to be. So if you're paying capital gains taxes or whatever on all your Bitcoin, then you're denominated in Bitcoin less the capital gains tax. If you spend Bitcoin like peer to peer and don't report it or whatever, then you're denominated in Bitcoin as it is. But if you never spend Bitcoin at all, you're denominated in what you do spend, which is fiat, right? So that just, I think I would just, I'd make this case that a lot of people want to be denominated in Bitcoin, but it's like you really aren't unless you're spending it. Like I buy a bag of coffee from Otis Bittmeyer every month and I see the price of it go down because I'm paying Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, to be clear, everyone should be a law-abiding citizen and follow the law. Yeah. But if you are interested in sort of the tax implication of Bitcoin, it's treated very, very similar to cash. And there's probably tons of resources you can go check out online for handling a cash business, running the taxes and the accounting and the bookwork for running a tax business. I'll also plug, my personal accountant, Satoshi Pacioli, a great Bitcoin accountant firm, that can help you out with those kinds of things. And as far as tracking it, I'm not really sure. I don't think I have a solution quite yet for that one.
I will say there are some Folds happens to be really good, and I think River, but those guys happen to be really good at tracking for tax purposes. And so, I get a 1099 at the end of the year from Fold and River, and I don't otherwise think too much about it. So I'm probably
what was the Satoshi Pacioli? What was that?
Yeah, Satoshi Pacioli. Let me see if I can find their X handle. But they're a great firm in this space.
That's not as real.
While Goblin is pulling that up, I would say from a spending perspective, one option would be to use the Strike app. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but you can go in there, fund it with a cash balance, and then spend the cash. And what it does is it converts that cash into Lightning. And it's immediate buy, immediate sell. So there is no tax implications of sending that cash balance via Lightning to make a purchase. So that is an option worth looking at. And like the other products that were mentioned, They do send you a 1099 if you meet a certain threshold, so that you can, you know, pay your cuck bucks to the government if you want to.
Yeah, I think that's a good call out. Strike also has a bill pay. You know, Jack Mallers himself talks about being on zero fiat, meaning he just floats a credit card balance month to month and pays it off from his Bitcoin. And I have an individual, that goes to my local meetup that does the same thing. They use the Strike bill pay and they have negative dollars because the only dollar balance that they have to worry about is the dollar balance that they have on their credit card. And, you know, you have mortgages and everything like that, but to my understanding, I have not personally tried it myself, but to my understanding, Strike bill pay allows you to do that from either the cash balance there or directly from a Bitcoin balance. So if you're ready to have Bitcoin as your unit of account, and you know, you can sweep whatever, fats you need to into your Strike account and then pay your bills from that. And then everything else can go to cold storage and sit there for future generations to enjoy. I see you still have your hand up. Did you have more Foiling Cowboy?
I was just looking at someone explaining this on Reddit. Can I, would the audience mind if I read the way they talk about capital gains and like see if we agree or disagree with this? This has always been my perspective on how, it's considered. It's a real quick thing. Can I read this?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So this person says every single purchase is considered a sale for capital gains purposes. This means if you buy a $7 burger from Steak and Shake, you need to record that transaction, the date, the price of Bitcoin at the time of the transaction, what part of your stack the payment was made from, i.e. do you use first in, first out? What was the price of Bitcoin when you purchased it? If there was any gain or loss during the period you bought and sold those sats, then you need to calculate it all, apply it to your tax return, pay the capital gains tax owed, then you need to keep all this information for 10 years. If you get audited. And that's where the mental hurdle comes in for me. And I'm like, this is a disaster. Like just a, from a paperwork, you know, regulatory overhead.
Yeah. And to be clear, we are not giving any financial or accounting or legal advice on this, but, it's always good to discuss these kind of things because it is a mental hurdle for a lot of things. So if you're worried about taxes, you know, go check out the Reddit post, go talk to your CPA. There's probably somewhere around locally that you could find that's, you know, quote unquote crypto friendly, even if they're not a Bitcoin only CPA. And they'll be the ones that will probably best guide you to do anything like that. But for those of you that are not super worried about it, you know, handle it like a cash business, which is one of the easiest and well established business models to run in the United States is a cash business, right? People have been doing that for decades and decades.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, awesome.
The fact that we're paying taxes to protect pedophiles is sickening anyway.
Well, that's a topic for another.
I agree with that.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely a topic for another discussion. But the beautiful thing about Bitcoin is even if you never spend your Bitcoin, right? Even if you're one of those people, maybe you're just getting into this and you haven't accumulated enough to warrant any spending. But just by taking your excess productive capacity, right? Because that's really what it is. Savings or anything excess from, you know, if you're spending less than you make, that little bit left over is your excess that you've produced for society that now you can set aside. If you're putting that into a system that cannot be debased and that undermines the concept of the most insidious tax, which is inflation, right? It's a hidden tax that most people aren't even aware is a tax. You know, you're avoiding inflation just by doing that alone. So even if you don't want the mental burden of thinking about all these different forms and talking to a CPA and everything like that, just be the best, whatever you are, right? If you're a dentist, mechanic, whatever, be the best mechanic that you can be and plow all your excess capacity into Bitcoin. And then maybe, you know, for your neighbor every once in a while, you can do a little one-off job and accept Bitcoin for that. And again, treat it as cash. Whatever excess flows you can put into it is strengthening one system and you're opting out of an existing system that is crumbling at an even increasingly rapid pace. All right, folks, we're getting close to the top of the hour. So I think we'll start wrapping up here. Fundamentals, thank you for joining us. I hope everybody in the audience found it insightful or at least highlighting something that you may not have considered when it comes to Bitcoin and institutions and what the implications are for not just the fiat world that we find ourselves in with a paper Bitcoin summer, but also for this bright, orange, beautiful future that we all find ourselves in where the hardest money ever known to man and humanity is accelerating us at a rapid pace. Did you have any closing thoughts or comments?
I would just say don't hesitate to reach out. I love talking to everybody. And if you have questions or you want to talk or you have anything relating to this, feel free. Don't hesitate. That's that.
You heard the man slide into his DMs, and then why don't you just give a quick rundown? Always polite to give a guest a good shill at the end. Where can they find you aside from here on Twitter?
I'm on Noster as Fundamentals. I would say check out the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast. That's my flagship podcast.
Rock Paper Bitcoin, actually also co-hosted by a Bitcoin veteran.
Yes, indeed.
What are your other podcasts? You have four, you said, right?
So I have a podcast called Motivate the Math that Gary and I co-host. I have a type for veterans, I guess. I like hosting podcasts with veterans. Although then I have a podcast called Back on the Chain, which is a Bitcoin-related Fish. Fish was the rock band. So that's a podcast. And then the Sound Coffee podcast with Otis Bittmeyer.
Awesome. Yeah, check it out, and especially check it out using the Fountain app, fountain.fm. If you are listening to podcasts and you're not stacking sats while you're listening, you're doing it wrong. If you download the Fountain app or use fountain.fm and set up an account, you can stack sats while listening to your favorite Bitcoin podcast. So if you're getting your 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast per week, as you all should to stay educated and current, that's a decent amount of sats that you can stack. And then most importantly, you can use that to support your favorite podcasting 2.0 app. Right. So all of those podcasts that he mentioned are podcasting 2.0 enabled, and it allows you to send boostergrams, which are basically amount of satoshis attached to a comment, almost like a super chat in Twitch, or it allows you to stream sats directly. Right. So the Fountain app enables you to click a button, and now you're streaming, 10 sats per minute to your favorite podcaster over the Lightning Network.
Yeah. And I should say we all four of my podcasts donate 10% to the Samurai Legal Defense.
Fantastic. Yeah, we touched on Samurai briefly, I think earlier this week. They are the open source developers that are being prosecuted for running a non-custodial wallet and infrastructure service. So if you're not familiar with the Samurai wallet guys, go check out the hashtag Free Samurai, or go do some research and some digging. It's quite the story and very impactful for the future of the Bitcoin economy here in the United States. Well, we got about 4 minutes until the top of the hour, so I think we'll probably wrap it here unless anybody had any last minute alibis or saved rounds.
Awesome, Gary. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. ACE, BFP, thanks for joining us. Foiling Cowboy, thanks for coming up on the stage and asking the questions. I think it's a good question, and no questions are bad. We all have to start somewhere in our journey, and beginning to understand begins with a question. So until tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, we are the Bitcoin veterans. Don't shitcoin. It's bad for your health, even worse than cigarettes, in my opinion. And stay humble and stack sats, folks. Thanks for having me today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.